This is Jane McGonigal, the author of Super Better and a big fan of the Psych Tech Podcast. You're listening to Psych Tech Podcast, where you will get the future of psychology and technology.
Welcome to Psych Tech, the Psychology and Technology Podcast. My name is Josue Cardona, and with me is Kelly Dunlap. How are you, Kelly?
I'm awesome, Sauce Josue. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. I'm excited about today's topic because I don't know how much I've brought it up here, but educational technology has been my obsession for a few years now. And this week, I saw an article on Engadget that talked about something called perceptive media, right? And I thought that was kind of cool. And I know I shared some links with you, and I kind of want to go over it because it's this project that the BBC, right? British Broadcasting Company, which brings me my Doctor Who every week. Mm-hmm. They have an R&D department. And they've done some really, really cool things over the years with this idea of perceptive media. And did you see what they did with the audio a couple years back from that article? All right. So they had this audio play that they created. Very short audio play. And what it does is it takes location information. It takes, I believe the only thing that it asks you when it starts is your location. And then based on that, it adds a whole bunch of information to this audio play in a way that you don't even really, there's no loading time, there's no transition, it's just seamless. And the story is actually really, really interesting because it's about this woman who leaves her apartment, goes down an elevator, and then stops the elevator all of a sudden. She's like, no, I can't do this. And then she wants to go back up and the elevator stops working. And then the elevator starts talking to her and she starts having this conversation with the elevator. She seems to have a form of agoraphobia, right? Like she mentions that she hasn't left her apartment in a very long time. And in the conversation that happens back and forth between her and the elevator, the elevator starts making references to things, to the weather outside based on weather data for the location that you're at. So it's your actual weather. And then it also brings up, it's like, well, you could go see a movie. Are you in the mood for a comedy? And then it tells you the name of a movie that's at a local movie theater. And it says, maybe, you know what would be really scary? And then he's like trying to make fun of her anxiety. And it says, why don't you go see a horror movie? That's really scary. This one is playing at blah, blah, blah. And it's actually a robotic voice that's reading the titles off. And then because I did it and I'm in the US, the location stuff didn't work because it's only designed for the UK. But it was using data from a local point over there, but it did still bring up the actual date. So she says, wait a minute, I haven't left my apartment in, wait a minute, how long was it? What day is today? And the robot just says, oh, today is December or whatever. And it was so cool. It's only about 10 minutes long. And this robot is just pulling information from your location to change the experience of the story that you're having. The story doesn't change. It's just very small details of it, too. And they did that about 3 years ago.
It's kind of like if Siri was an elevator.
And it worked. Yeah.
And if instead of having to ask Siri for things, she just provided information for you without asking.
Exactly. That's what they call perceptive media is about. It's about taking this information about you, in this case it's just your location, to kind of adjust the experience that you're having. So it's absolutely something like Siri or Cortana or something like that. But then what they did, they've done that with audio for, that was about 3 years ago, I think. And then this week, they started talking about a video project that they're doing. And that one's pretty cool too. And if you follow the links and you go and you check out what they're doing, it's essentially the same idea, but the version that they have right now, it's actually using a personality test to come up with information about you, a few general tidbits also, and then it completely changes the viewing experience. And the example that they show, for example, has if you're like male versus female bias and what kind of perspective they would prefer during a particular scene. And it shows in the video that, oh, well, if you're female, you're most likely going to want to see it from this perspective. And if you're male, you most likely want to see it from this perspective. It can also change the color saturation and the brightness depending on your mood. They have all these different theories going out about how to do this. And right now, the version that they have seems to only work with this personality app. It's called, this is confusing because the project is called Perceptive Media, but the app, and you can download this app right now, and it does a personality test based on your music interests. I'm going to ask you about that in a second. And this is called Preceptive. So Perceptive versus Preceptive. And then it takes this profile and it adjusts the video viewing to that. And this kind of blew my mind for a number of reasons, but I want to get your take on kind of the video stuff too. Like, what does that make you think about? What do you think?
Well, there's a lot of thoughts that come to mind. So I downloaded Preceptive.
You did, okay.
Because anything that claims to measure your personality, I am always insanely skeptical of and probably will laugh at. Mm-hmm. And this held true. Mm-hmm. I, for example, I gave it absolutely no information. Like, it required my name and my gender and my age. But then it asked for music preferences and, you know, like, rate yourself on your happiness scale and your whatever scale. And it came up and told me that I was the teacher personality type. I'm like,
nope. Exactly the same thing I got.
Yeah. So my big thing is, if you don't give a test any information and it still delivers you a quote unquote personality type, it's not really measuring anything. And there's a big pop culture thing around on personality tests. People love them because people love learning about themselves, but it's kind of like the Myers-Briggs. They're all unvalidated poppycock, to take a UK word, since we're talking about the BBC. So, you know, it's, I mean, I'll totally admit, I take the, you know, what dog best reflects your personality, but nobody takes that seriously. Not really. So people are inclined to make sense out of whatever is said and say, oh, well, yeah, that could apply to me. That's why fortune cookies, when they actually gave fortunes, as opposed to just declarative statements now, why they worked. And it's also why, you know, those kind of personality tests, that's why a lot of people are into astrology. No offense to anybody out there who's into astrology, but your daily forecast or whatever, you will, if you read it after your day, you will, your brain will do gymnastics trying to figure out how that actually did meet your day. And if you read it beforehand, your brain will actively work to identify things that happen in your day that meet that criteria. So as far as this idea of identifying your personality, I call total BS. If this was Mythbusters, this would be busted. I have absolutely no, just wrong, rejected.
And I'm glad you brought this up, because it's one of those areas where I don't know how these conversations usually go with you and other people in psychology, but some people love the personality testing and all that stuff. And because of my bias towards it, maybe because of how, you know, the pop psychology of it, I it's the one area in psychology that I can't get into and I can't speak to. And like, personality disorders are like the thing that I'm least knowledgeable about, and like, I would never claim to really, really speak on, because of all how just charged the whole conversation is. And I agree, there's so much of that, oh, I'm personality this, I'm personality that, and that means this and that means that, and it usually just bothers me. So I'm glad to hear we share
yeah,
this.
And I love personality issues in general. Personality disorders are really challenging to work with. I've mm-hmm. had a little experience and it was incredibly challenging. But I also know from my training, when you're doing a personality assessment, like something that goes to court, you're talking an 8 to 12 hour battery. Mm-hmm. You're talking exactly. about 8 to 12 hours of testing and asking questions and investigating and researching and synthesizing data from multiple different tests. And, you know, even then that's kind of can be precarious. So this idea of you sit down and take a 20-minute test to find out all your deepest, darkest, I'm like, no, just absolutely no.
But then and this I also, app in particular was like 5 seconds.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Yeah. And this app has nothing to do with the BBC research per se. This is just what they were using to kind of pull information from. And they mention in what they're doing that this is just what they started with, and they could just as easily pull information from anything else. So, but I still thought it was interesting that based on music interest. There's some research articles there. I'm interested to see what they'll say, but.
Yeah, I mean, there's ways of looking at personality and music, and although I'm sorry, Perceptive, that I'm not buying into your personality thing, I do think that there is something there based on your music preferences and based on how you choose to self-identify, that they can pull some meaningful information from that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're talking about perceptive media and being able to change a video experience on the fly based on your preferences. So it makes sense to me that if it has a history of your preferences, you know, given your music selection, because people tend to only have music in their library that they like, and they tend to only endorse the, I don't want to call them personality traits, we'll call them not personality traits, like emotional states and how they think about themselves, you know, that's going to inform what they like. So for example, I have a lot of Backstreet Boys on my phone and NSYNC and 90 Degrees. And it doesn't take a computer algorithm to figure out, well, she's probably a child of the 90s because that's, you know, it was kind of the big cultural resonance at that time. And she's probably female because females tended to be the biggest Backstreet Boys fans. And so it can make assumptions. And then as a child of the 90s, it's going to have a better idea of what my experiences were. Not perfect. But there's a difference between making a reference to maybe Simon and Garfunkel that I'm going to completely miss and making a reference to, say, the Ninja Turtles, which is going to be more relevant to me. So it's not without its promise, but I think if everybody could just stop using the word personality, it's kind of like that Princess Bride moment where you keep using that word. It does not mean what you think it means. That would be great.
Hashtag stop saying personality.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's do this. I'm with you. I'm with you. And yeah, and some of those things would be some of the adjustments that could be made to the media would be really obvious. Like you said, well, we can film 5 different references and then we'll make the one that, you know, is the most likely for you to get. Right. And that mm-hmm. would probably help a lot. I don't know, you know, lots of times you're watching a movie or something and if you don't get the references, like, you know, the jokes fall flat, some things don't even make sense. And so those things are really obvious. And then but there's things that are like really, really subtle, just like the idea of the color correction or the brightness. Or and something like the change of perspective is really, really interesting because you may never know, you know, you wouldn't see the other perspective necessarily, but it's not the type of thing that you would immediately say, oh, that's where they did it. That's where they used my information. I mm-hmm. got that, right? It would be just so transparent that you wouldn't realize it. And then if you used, like you mentioned, emotional states, right? If you there was a very simple check-in at the beginning on your mood, it could make a few things different so that even maybe one day you were feeling kind of sad and it showed you the movie in one way. And then the other day you were, you know, happy and then it showed you the movie in a different way. And so you could have the same movie or the same show or the same anything. And then on repeated viewings, you could see it a little differently.
It reminds me a lot of either a Facebook feed or a Twitter feed, particularly with BuzzFeed, where it doesn't necessarily take into account your emotional state, but it'll ask you questions to make you reflect on your emotional state. So, for example, one of my favorite, it's finals week right now, so there's a lot of stress going on in my life. And there was a BuzzFeed article that popped up in my Twitter feed that said, you know, feeling upset or feeling sad. Here's, you know, find out what kind of puppy you need based on how you feel. So, of course, I naturally go to that because it has the word puppy in it. and it had a bunch of different emotions labeled, like happy, sad, excited, nervous, anxious, stressed. So I clicked stressed, and then it produced for me a puppy scientifically designed to reduce stress. And it was just this adorable puppy that, you know, you couldn't help but laugh, and it was cute. And so I started pushing all the other buttons, like, what does a happy puppy look like? And it just kind of reflected happiness. And if it was sad, it was one of those, oh, puppy. So again, not scientifically validated here, but the idea that giving people different stimuli based on how they're feeling or experiencing the world is not new. But what's really cool with this perceptive media stuff is that it looks like we're getting to the point where you don't have to seek it out, that maybe it comes to you instead.
Yeah, yeah. And after you do the audio play that I talked about, it does have this survey, and it asks you, like, what information would you feel comfortable providing or not for this type of experience? And, you know, it's things like, would you provide your real name? Would you provide family members' names? Would you provide purchase history? And as I was reading that, then I started, you know, the very, very, very obvious parallels to advertising, right? You're getting all these pop-ups, and many of them are based on your location. They're based on the cookies on your computer, on what you've been doing recently, and then it caters them to that. Or now that, like, I use Hulu all the time, so there's, you know, there are obviously ads based on what I'm watching, right? They're not going to completely, you know, there are things in the background working, trying to figure that out so they can, you know, and you're being targeted all the time. But it's so different to see the idea of being targeted something for purchase and being targeted something so that you actually feel comfortable. Like, I hate ads, right? I mean, who doesn't hate ads? And they're invasive.
Don Draper.
They're invasive, and they ruin the experience of whatever it is that you're doing. Very rarely are you thankful for an ad. And this is the complete opposite. It's like, well, maybe we can make the experience more comfortable. Maybe we can make the experience see, and then the comfort part is the part that gets me excited the most. Because the making it more fun, more funny, more relevant, that's great. That makes that has the potential to make the experience more engaging. But the fact that it can use different information. Like, it doesn't have to be psychometrics. It doesn't have to be demographic. It can be something as simple as adjusting to, well, for example, and well, this again, we'll talk about video games a lot about this too. On my consoles, I have them set up so that whenever a game plays, I want subtitles on them, right? Mm-hmm. And that type of thing is normal on TV, right? Like, if you put the captions on, you put subtitles, or even if you have a Blu-ray player, you can set it so that, you know, always show my movies with subtitles. But even my consoles have that feature. So now, at least the PS4 does, so I can set it up that way. And every time a game plays, I never have to think about it. There's always subtitles at the bottom. And that's a very simple way to do it. And now to be able to introduce that into other areas, like, again, in video games, it could be, you know, always play inverted, or always play, there are accessibility features on your phone and on consoles that adjust for color contrast if you're colorblind, for example, and things like that. So taking that to another level for comfort, like maybe really, really bright colors, you know, the brightness, really crazy brightness really bothers my eyes. And then there's a feature so that, like, oh yeah, we'll tone that down. Or even the volume, or even things like that. But then changing the content is where it kind of blows it wide open. Because we've talked about Vine here on the show, mm-hmm. right? And, like, it's hard, right? I mean, it's a lot of fun, but those decision trees and branches can get really, really, really complicated. Like, I don't know how complicated yours have gotten, but it could just get huge, you know? And to keep track of all that with audio content and with video content, like, that's a lot of work, especially depending on what you're going for.
Yeah, I had an interesting experience, because one of the things in preparation for the show was a app called Interlude, which really is basically an app for interactive videos. You know, you're allowed to interact with the video. It reminded me a lot of the old VH1 pop-up videos kind of thing.
Yeah.
But instead of the information bubble popping up, it's more of, hey, do you want information? If so, click this pop-up, and then you will be directed to seamlessly, which blew my mind, to different content.
Yeah,
within the same video.
Oh, Interlude is fantastic. I actually found out about that at Games for Change this year. At one of the, I think it was during, like it was on the day where the keynote happened. Actually, no, the day before. I don't know. It was in another place separate from the main attraction where we went. And they showed a short film called Possibilia. And I'm unable to find it online. I can find information about it, but I've been unable to see it online. But what happens is the movie starts, and then this couple has an argument. And then at that moment, it's like the screen splits in half. The couples both, like then you see two versions of the couple, and you see two versions of the same event. And then you don't realize it, but that line that appeared in the middle, you can move it to the left or to the right and completely just see one version of the story or the other. And then you see what's playing out if this had happened or if that had happened. And that was so amazing. It was just incredible. And they have that company or that tool. It's really a tool. Lots of advertising companies have been making some really cool stuff. And yeah, it's just absolutely mind-blowing that it can be so seamless. Even the demo that they have on the main page is really silly, but it gives you these different options. And it's a little different because you can kind of tell, like, okay, he said, you know, pick my outfit, and you can click one button, and then through this seamless transition, he changes to another outfit, and then something else happens, and you can choose the activity. But there's different versions of the way that this can be used, and so it makes me believe, right? Because we can see it happening already, that it's possible and that we're just limited by the applications of it.
See, I had a really strongly different reaction because I was on Interlude and I'm just kind of flipping through the different videos, and I randomly clicked on one to get as many different experiences as I could. And it was almost kind of like a dress-up game where you could decide, you know, do you want to go with the geek chic or the business professional? So I'm just kind of going through it and making my choices. And at the end, I realized it was an ad. And I really didn't like that. I didn't like that going into it. I didn't know. I mean, because it's right beside other content that's just content. It was right next to one about Morgan Spurlock and calling BS on the presidential candidates. So, you know, something that's actually, you know, journalistic and based in fact. And then I clicked on this thing and it ended up being an ad. And I realized that I had spent time with an ad and it made me feel really dirty. And I really, really didn't like that.
So, and I think that's the, like, that's why it so obviously, all of this stuff obviously reminds me of ads. And if you look on there, it is a tool that marketing firms could absolutely use. And actually, probably some of the best use I've seen of it, other than Possibilia. Possibilia is a short film. But other uses of it have been, or the best use I've seen was from another marketing company. And in this case, it was like, I forgot exactly what the effect was, but it was essentially moving towards, I think, 2050 and seeing the world through two different lenses, if we had renewable energy or if we didn't. And one was looked like apocalyptic and the other one looked beautiful and futuristic.
Of course.
Yeah. And it was like that same thing where you move the slider and you could see the same locations. So it was like panning through these different places and you could see the two different versions simultaneously, but still an ad, even though it was like for a nonprofit.
I had two very cultural based reactions. So when I was playing the, you know, call bullpucky on the presidential candidate, it reminded me a lot of Starship Troopers, which is a great propaganda film. But, you know, it's delivering the propaganda, and at the end of each segment, it says, would you like to know more? And it allows you to drill down. And that's kind of what happened with this Morgan Spurlock game. Is, you know, the presidential candidate would make a statement and then you click the BS meter if you think it was BS. And if you click it and it said you're correct, then it took you to this other clip that was basically the facts behind the statement. So, for example, the example that Morgan Spurlock uses, you know, I'm Morgan Spurlock, I'm the smartest man in the world. So you, of course, you click the BS meter, and then it has a little, you know, 10, 20 second clip behind it about, yeah, I'm Morgan Spurlock, but I'm not the smartest man in the world yet. Or if you called BS on a presidential candidate, it basically gave you the backstory or the facts about why that thing was false. So I thought that was pretty cool, but it definitely reminded me of Starship Troopers in that effect. And then the ad one that I did that I didn't like, it reminded me a lot of Minority Report, which we've talked about several times on this show, particularly when Tom Cruise walks into the mall and all of the billboards, they scan his eyes, they recognize him, and they start pushing or promoting items he might want based on his previous purchase history, ask him, hey, how'd those skinny jeans fit? And things like that. And yeah, it was, on one hand, it's very discomforting because I personally am not comfortable with having ad content juxtapose journalistic content. But I also think it's really cool if something can help me make decisions. I don't, it's just this weird space where I want something to help me to make decisions and make my life easier, but at the same time, I don't want to surrender my control. It's a weird place to be.
And absolutely, that's exactly where I was, where I am. I'm part of it, right? It's like somebody's going to use this technology to make my life worse, right? But the part that I was excited about is not the Minority Report ad bombardment or just using that to make the ads that we get now. Like, not only are we getting pop-ups, and now we're getting pop-ups that are interactive, so it takes me longer, and now I just can't wait 30 seconds, now I have to hit 30 buttons. That would be horrible.
It's very Black Mirror in that kind of way.
Yes. But the potential that I see, and the thing that gets me the most excited, is using this in learning. So we use video games or video game design concepts, making things interactive, making things adaptive, right? So BBC uses the word, or is calling it perceptive media. I like it. I like the name, actually. But there's this idea of personalization, adaptation in education, which means, you know, if you're getting something, if you get a question wrong, the next question might be a little easier than the one from before. And then once you get the easier ones, then it'll start ramping up the difficulty again. And that's all happening without you having to say anything. You're just doing what you're doing. Obviously, that sounds a lot like video games, right? And a lot of that has come from years of people playing video games and being able to adjust difficulty. And some games really do a good way of doing that, adapting to your difficulty. So it might get easier or harder as you're progressing. Some have a more... different kinds of progression systems, but that kind of adaptive experience is very common in video games. Even the thing about the choices, right? It's something very, very common. There, adventure games have been built around things like that for decades, and so it's nothing new in that space. But in learning, there's still, like, educational technology is a crazy field because you just see everything just like people throwing, you know, things at the wall to see what sticks, and it just, you see a little bit of everything. But a lot of what you see on the technology side leans towards how do you personalize and how do you make things more adaptive. And the way that that's been happening is just very much on the interactive side, just like it is video games.
Even before that, you know, when I was thinking about education and having learning materials be adaptive, I instantly thought of IEPs, individualized educational plans. I think that's what it stands for.
Yeah.
And that's basically what we do right now with children who aren't able to either keep up or have some kind of disability that prevents them from doing their homework and they need particular accommodation. So whether it's emotional disturbance and requires, or just they need extra time on a test, maybe they're dyslexic, maybe they have a math difficulty, and so they're allowed to use a calculator where other children would not. And so there is this idea of trying to individualize education for everyone, but it doesn't, the process IEPs are tons of work, and they're a nightmare for pretty much everybody involved.
And IEPs are not, like, it's not for everyone. It's just for, like, you draw a line and you're like, well, if you have any of these specific needs, then we're going to go through this, you know. And then there's like a whole team of people, right? Like, yes, you were alluding to. There's a lot of people involved. There's a lot of testing. And then there's a lot to actually adapt everything that's happening. Depending on the school where you're at, it may be the actual main teacher who is making the accommodations. It might be someone else who's coming in and making accommodations based on that curriculum or on what you're doing in class. They may need to be in a separate class. It may be happening in the same one. But it takes a whole team of people for one student to get the accommodations that they need to kind of level the playing field.
And like you said, it's only for if you hit a certain criteria. While there are plenty of children who might not have a specific disability but are struggling in a particular area nonetheless, and, you know, this idea that one size fits all in education has always blown my mind, especially considering, you know, there's so much that you learn that you don't really ever need. And while there's important to have a good foundation to draw from, I don't think I ever will use geometry, ever. And you know, the idea of tailoring, I think we talked about this before, actually, about tailoring the educational experience to be more in line with the student's actual interests. Mm-hmm. So if you were to teach, say, geometry, because I guess it's important to know for those math people and whatnot, but for somebody who's interested in, say, medicine or veterinary school, finding a way to adapt learning geometry to actually be relevant to their interests is, I think, to me, kind of the gold standard of what we should be doing, so that we're still teaching the information, but it's actually retained and relevant, as opposed to being taught in a very sterile, you know, lowest common denominator kind of way that nobody really cares about. And I think this is where the technology piece, as Josue has mentioned, comes into play, because the computer can do that on the fly.
Yeah, for me, when I was like, my sixth grade experience was horrible. And then when I got to seventh and eighth grade, I had this amazing teacher, Mrs. Fisher. And she was, I've been wondering about this lately, if she would have been as amazing as she was had we been in a larger classroom. Because I went to a very, very small private school for seventh and eighth grade, and there were only seven people in my eighth grade class. So she was able to really, 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 you know, cater to each person. We were all reading, you know, a different book, and she would discuss it with each of us. We all had different assignments, and it was extremely personalized. And I loved school back then. And it was such a different experience. And it was something that I really didn't experience ever again. Because once I went to high school, it was huge classrooms. College, we still had the same problems. And that personalization makes such a big difference, whether it's on the interest side or even on something like when I did my master's degree, a lot of the classes, you know, you go on like Blackboard or Canvas or whatever, you know, service that the university is using. And we would have video lectures, for example. And I wanted to be able to listen to the audio of the lectures while I was doing something else and repeat it. Right. So now I had gone from just listening to a teacher standing in front of class and me taking notes to being able to take the video lecture and repeat it as many times as I wanted. But for me, it would have been even more useful if I could just listen to the audio and then listen to it on a commute, you know, to listen to it again if I wanted. So I was able to do that. I just downloaded the video and I extracted the audio and I put it on my MP3 player. And maybe that was even an advantage to other people who didn't know how to do that, because I suddenly had access to the information in more places than one. Like, you don't know what effect that could have had, but it would have been great to have that option. And that's just like one example of the way that you could kind of fine tune different media to help students different ways, like to get to the learning, right?
And the crazy thing, this is not a new concept. The idea of some students being visual learners, some students being auditory learners, and some students being kinesthetic learners, so people who do best by actually doing or learn best by actually doing. This is, again, not anything new. This is well-established psychological science, social science, educational science. But even though we have all this information, it's been, well, I mean, education isn't valued in this country. I mean, clearly. I'll throw out that political statement real quick. And you know, so this idea that the resources needed to produce the kind of environment you had in sixth grade, where it's almost one-on-one attention, is, it's not there. Like, it's not realistic to think that that would be the norm. So if that's not going to happen, and it, you know, so far it hasn't, you know, finding other ways to try and get that individualized, tailored educational experience is important. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing with this perceived media and tailoring it specifically to student learning. I can imagine sitting down in a computer and being given, say, a math problem, and I solve it, and then I go on to the next math problem, which might be a little bit harder, and then I solve that one, and I get to the third one, and I get it wrong, and then maybe it tapers off, or it tries again. Maybe I didn't get that one. And it, so it's very game-like in that way, in that it is gradually becoming more difficult. It's the flow channel, as we like to say in games. This idea, it's the precarious balance between boredom and it being too difficult, that channel right between those two sections. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with digital content, it can, with your feedback, change difficulty on the fly. It's dynamic, and it can really create a more tailored response.
Yeah, and all of this is on the interaction, on the interactive side, is, again, people are trying all sorts of stuff, right? But on the media side is what's really interesting to me. There's this psychologist named Richard Mayer, and he has these 12 principles of design for multimedia in learning. And once you read that, you start looking like, you'll never see a PowerPoint the same way again, because mm-hmm. you're like, man, like these people have, like, they're not hitting any of the principles, right? This is a horrible PowerPoint. And it's just very, very simple things like, don't fill the screen with stuff that's not relevant. And, you know, don't, if you're saying it, it's learning is better if there's just a picture and you're narrating versus there being words on the screen and you're reading them at the same time. Like, a lot of small things like that, right? But then, like, you look back at that now and then you think about a world in which something like the perceptive media is a tool that you have available, it kind of changes everything. Because if you're talking about something that's not interactive, if you're just talking about the actual lecture part and you can use the perceptive media for it, now there are things like, let's say it knows that you saw it one time, so when you see it the second time, it can change some of the graphics maybe. Maybe it can even change the order of things, because once you present the same information in a different way, it actually enhances learning. Mm-hmm. And then it's just keeping track of that and then adjusting on the fly, right? It could also affect, you know, take an influence from your mood or take an influence from your location, right? So if there's a lecture that has something to do, or in this case, it could be a word problem or something like that in math. And then what if it did take the weather into account? Or what if there were all of these things inside it that had to do with your location? So it talks about the park down the street or the corner store, or it talks about the movies that are in theaters now instead of being so static, right? Because I can, we'll have this podcast up today and forever it'll talk about, I don't know, Richard Mayer's 12 principles of design, right? And then, you know, if you listen to it 2 years from now, maybe he's updated and there's 20, right? And how great would it be if we could kind of have that so that it pulls that information from there and presents it to you. So it is, it becomes, it's always timely, right? It's always relevant. And then I can, like, the different ways that it could cater to you, just something as simple as, like, what are your favorite colors? And then it introduces more of your favorite colors than the colors that you don't like. Like, something like that could actually make the experience way more, just even if it's just more comfortable, why not make education a little more comfortable, a little more, again, cater to you? Like, oh, like, you know, like, it cares about me, you know, and that's a great experience to feel kind of like supported, and then that it's real and it's grounded. I don't know. I'm really excited. There's just so many ways that this could go, and even in video games where it's all interactive, there's still cutscenes and things like that, and those aren't really that dynamic either. You know, that there's still like this static part of it because it's the storytelling aspect. But imagine you start thinking about the storytelling aspect with, you know, elements that, again, are updated regularly. I don't know. It's so, I really think this can make a huge difference at every level of education. I mean, some of us spend more time in college than we do in grade school, right? And now
I'm feeling targeted here.
Hey, maybe. and there's so much learning that's going on now with MOOCs and online. And, you know, just YouTube is like a huge educational platform. How many people go online and they end up watching a video when they're really looking for information? Right? We've gone from just Googling it and seeing and asking a question and getting an answer to Googling and getting watching a video response. And then to be able to have all that stuff be updated and then be more relevant to you and kind of cater to you is just so great.
The most exciting thing for me is not only that this technology is currently existing, but that technology is continuing to get smaller and more mobile. And to me, the idea of a kid, you know, on the playground has maybe they've got an updated Fitbit and is giving them information about the world around them. You know, the kid looks at a cloud and it goes, oh, that's a cumulonimbus cloud. Or, you know, they look at, I don't know, or the weather, or they look at something in particular, that's a 45 degree angle. So the idea again of moving it, I think a lot of people associate technology with sitting still and staring at a screen. And I think we need to move beyond that, because no matter how good dynamic learning gets, children, especially grade school children, need to go outside and expel energy and, you know, have an active lifestyle to be, you know, healthy. And I mean, that's part of the learning process too, is, you know, learning if you fall off the monkey bars, it hurts. You can't really simulate that too well in a digitally based space. And I think we're moving that way anyway. But that to me is the most exciting part, that you can kind of do it with your phone now with augmented reality. It's not really a game. I guess it's an experience created by one of the professors here that just joined the faculty, where in DC you hold up your tablet and it sees, you know, say the Washington Monument or whatever, and then you hit a button and it changes to what DC looked like 100 years ago. And then as you move the tablet around, it changes. So basically you're kind of seeing the current world through an old lens. So by physically moving the tablet, you get a different experience. So you get to see, wow, the Capitol building wasn't there, or this Smithsonian wasn't there. It was a giant cattle pen, which I thought was
really cool. We talked about HoloLens, and that's where things like this would be just huge, right? That's the next level. It's like it's not even asking you for information. It's just scanning your immediate environment.
So yeah, it could use. Once we can get rid of the goofy headgear, that's what I'm looking forward to.
And I love goofy headgear. That's the future. Anytime we see the future, it's like some sort of goofy headgear.
Now it's going to be my contact lens. It's going to be my contact lens at some point. Or just on my glasses. I'll just put the lens over my glasses lens and I'll be all set.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But probably in our lifetime it'll always be some sort of goofy headgear.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, so we're still far from having goofy headgear right now in the classroom, but I am looking forward to the day when that happens. And actually, so this is one thing I was thinking about. We talk about the individualized experience, and like I don't really want to invite friends over to watch a movie and then we all pop a headset on, right? Mm-hmm. But I do think that it would be interesting to let one person choose or fill out the questionnaire, and then it kind of adapts to them. Or maybe it'll even, you know, fill out the room and just kind of, you know, provide an average for everybody in the room and then cater the experience to that. I don't know. The potential for interactive experiences like that are just so exciting. And then, but it does make my brain hurt a little when I think about the pre-production that would go into something, even something simple. Really make these things significant. If only if that goes into the content side, because otherwise, again, just adjusting settings. If we do get to a point where all of your TVs have these certain settings that are adjusted accordingly to some of the things that we're talking about, to whatever it may be, even just something like, hey, like your heart rate's a little elevated. Are you sure you want to, like, this episode of whatever is very exciting. Are you sure you want to see this?
So what I've experienced as part of my training this semester is I wrote a Twine game that had a bazillion different branches, and it was a terrible, terrible experience trying to bring all those branches back together and into a cohesive kind of story. And it is, you get to this point where it's exponential, and there's no way to actually author that much content. So on the other side, I'm working on a project with some of my professors for a social simulation game. And my professors are these big expert guru people in artificial intelligence. And so what we're actually doing right now is there's a group of students, we're creating micro series. So basically we're taking an emotion and saying what happens based on wherever the player is. So for example, if the player is known to the AI, then the AI will have +5 trust, or the player will +5 trust the AI. So through simulation like that, through artificial intelligence, you no longer have to have branching. So I think maybe that's where we might be headed. As games have, it seems like games are a good solid step ahead of pretty much everybody else. I can see artificial intelligence becoming something that's more, that helps with that issue of exponential branching of possible narratives. Now, on the other side, that weird ad that I saw, I remember watching it thinking, how many takes did this take? Because, you know, you see there's two people, and then you pick one person, and then you can pick, you know, purse or shoes or skirt or pants. And so I'm thinking for each one of these, they had to shoot her doing this particular thing with that particular object. And once again, that goes back to the branching and not quite infinite choices. But I do think it puts a lot of pressure on the content creators to make that happen.
Yeah.
But at the same time, technology is rapidly evolving to the point where maybe that'll be taken off our hands soon, because we can just provide a artificial intelligence with rule sets such as, you know, if somebody is angry with you, you are less, you know, they are less likely to help you. That's a very simple logic-based rule, but then you add in 100 other logic-based rules like that, and you're going to get a at least a social experience in this case that is pretty accurate and dynamic without a bazillion branching possibilities.
Yeah, and
that had to be authored.
Yeah, and right now we're at that stage where it's all cool factor, right? It's like,
yeah.
Oh, look, they're gonna change the color of the thing, and you can do this other thing, but I'm excited about the meaningful applications of this. You know, again, that's why things like how can we make the experience just more comfortable? I think that's a pretty good goal, and then to be able to improve someone's access to education, and like, and that example that you gave with a, like a million branches, that's a lot of different versions of the same video, right? You could just like,
yeah,
instead of having to choose, just hit shuffle, watch it again, and then watch it again, and then you can just see it play out differently. And to be able to do that in education with a tool that kind of see, and that's the exciting part, right? Once we have a tool that has that AI integrated that can do a lot of that legwork, and it's kind of talking you through it. Like, okay, now give me three choices, and then it will write up the three choices, you know, so you don't have to, because in Twine you have to write every single word, right? And,
yeah,
and things like that. Yeah. And you know, to be able to adapt that, and video is just really, really hard to do something like that with. And I think that the people that do it first are going to get a lot of attention, but in education and stuff, I can see that happening a lot with animation, and that's there's so much potential there because you can crank that out a lot faster.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the idea of seeing students as unique individuals and hopefully reframing the conversation, not so much that we're, you know, we're catering to or we're creating a generation of soft, weak, overly sensitive, yeah, because I see that all the time and it makes me so mad, but more the idea that every person is different, and if you can make a step to make somebody else's life better, why aren't you doing it?
Do you, if you play any of the Telltale video games, for example?
Yes. Love it.
Right? Like, you can play the game today. I'll play the game. And then we come back and we're talking about it and we had completely different experiences.
That's pretty much any, well, Telltale games in particular, but any RPG.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the Telltale in particular, they're just designed in that branching way, right? They are like a Vine game in itself, right?
They're narrative stories.
Yeah, and the endings can be different. Like in video games, even in many RPGs, doesn't matter. Like the end is usually the same. The last cutscene is usually the same.
And I was very few Skyrim. Games...
So. Well, does Skyrim have multiple endings?
It does not have multiple endings, but there's no...
Oh, yeah, but exactly. There's a million different stories, right? And yeah, and your day was different than my day. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and we can play the same storyline and experience it differently because there's one main quest, and that's really the only linear thing.
Yeah, exactly.
As opposed to if you're doing, say, a guild quest where, you know, I'll kick down the door and dual wield my way through an entire dungeon while my husband is a sneaky little thief and will creep through. And so we'll do the same quest, but we'll have totally different experiences, even if the outcome is the same. Yeah. And that's kind of what we want in education is we want the outcome to be the same. We want the kids to know the thing that they're learning, but how they get to that goal should be up to them.
Well, and just imagine two kids right after doing their lesson coming to you and saying like, oh, did you do the thing, what did you get on the problem that was asking about the Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 2? And I was like, oh, I didn't get that one. I got a question that was about, what else is in theaters now? No, about Star Wars. It's coming up. It's like, oh, you got a Star Wars one? I didn't get a Star Wars one. And then that the other kid wants to go back,
yeah,
you know, and then try the lesson again to get, like, things like that are possible. And I think this brings that so much closer. I'm so excited.
It's what happens when you see human beings as individuals and not just vacant receptacles to be mass applied to.
Yeah, yeah.
Very, very passionate about that.
Oh, man. So good. Yeah, and we'll talk about more of this stuff in the future. The future. I do want to thank Ian from the BBC R&D group who clarified for me that the app that they're using in that video presentation right now is Preceptive, right? And that is like a separate company. It is not them. In the original article that I read, it made it sound like it was something that they created, and that's not mm-hmm. them. So thank you to Ian. And
thanks, Ian.
And thank you, Kelly.
Thank you, Hoseway.
Good luck. Good luck in finals.
Oh, yeah.
Make it happen. everybody, if you want more PsychTech, go to psychtechpodcast.com or visit us on Twitter at PsychTechCast. And from now on, you can follow us or find the links to follow us or find out more about the show in the little description in your phone. Just look at the description. The links That's will so be right cool. there. So just do that. All right. And we'll see everybody next week.